element, because it means the darkness inside Shane that he's often alluded to is much blacker than I imagined. Pieces shift slowly into place. The gun, the fights, his calm confidence when promising to deal with the man who splashed me with rose water. The Shane I've known is an illusion. The handsome, quick-witted boy who carried my science project sandbags seems to have been a cover for who he really is. I can't even wrap my head around that. Mafia is synonymous with murder for hire, right? Has Shane actually killed someone? My mom texts several times. I assure her I've left Mr. Sullivan's and I'm safely back at school. Beyond that, I don't know what to say to her yet. I'm non-committal in my texts. I need to talk with her and Ethan. Like Shane, there's a lot they've been hiding from me. Meanwhile, I'm having an off-the-rails shady Cinderella day. Shane has a personal shopper waiting for me at an upscale department store. She seems to understand her assignment better than I do, because within 40 minutes, I've tried on 5 dresses in silvery shades, and 1 has been charged to Shane's account. Next, he drops me off at a spa appointment that some unnamed assistant made for me. I'm exfoliated, waxed, and covered in nourishing body butter. My skin feels amazing, and my pussy feels very, very bare. As I'm leaving the spa, I recognize some trust fund girls from school. For them, it's a day of pampering. For me, it was something else. I feel like a harem girl who's been groomed for her big night with the Sultan. Which isn't to say the scalp massage wasn't fantastic. I might start donating plasma to afford another one. When I emerge, Shane's leaning against his car, waiting. His gaze rakes over me, seemingly taking inventory of his property. Give some men an inch and they take a mile. It was one orgasm, I whisper, giving him a salty expression. Pardon? The word is prep school polite, but his tone holds a dangerous challenge. In return, my tone is, you need to take me seriously firm. Don't treat me like your trophy wife, Shane. I'm not that girl. My hand reaches for the car door's handle, but his catches it. His hand is so much bigger, it closes over mine entirely. That's a shame. From his tone, it's clear my accusation doesn't trouble him. I've never been in the market for a trophy girlfriend before, but you'd make a good one. He leans forward, so his mouth is near my ear. When he speaks, his voice is low and teasing. Did you let them wax it? Or did you keep your curls? I want to kill him. But for some reason, I laugh softly, even as my face flames with embarrassment. So that wasn't just part of a generic spa package he bought. Shane actually told them he wanted me waxed. Unbelievably high-handed. And his implying that I could have said no increases my discomfort. It didn't occur to me to refuse. Why didn't it? Maybe because a part of me is starting to feel like I am one of Shane's possessions. I purse my lips and give him a little shake of my head. That information is need to know, and you don't. It's his turn to chuckle. Challenge accepted.
Shane. Avery, let's roll. What the hell is she doing for over an hour? Stalling so I'll leave without her? Not going to happen. I flex my wrists impatiently. I need time to supervise the unloading of the liquor, and the clock's ticking. Plus, I'm losing interest in the big reveal. The only outfit I really want to see her in is nothing. My phone buzzes with another agitated text from the frat's high-strung treasurer. Is he wired on coke or what? I send a text to see where Sorensen is. He can take possession of the crates and bring them in. I'm the only one who will be unboxing the bottles for the VIP room. But the second and third tier stuff is good to go. Letting the asshole treasurer get his hands on those lesser bottles would probably settle him down. Heels clicking on the stairs brings my gaze up instantly. The platinum dress is a goddamn ball gown, and it's sexy as fuck. There's a deep, plunging neckline that a man could reach inside to squeeze a breast. The skirt's loose and made of two panels that allow high slits to open practically to the hip. I could reach inside the skirt, too, to stroke her pussy. The dress is worth every penny I paid. My tongue touches my top lip. My face could get into the skirt in a heartbeat, too, to give my tongue what it's dying for. Another sweet taste of her, and another shot at pushing deep into her virgin pussy. I drag my eyes up to her face and pause. She's done something with her makeup that hits me below the belt as well. Shimmery silver and charcoal on her lids and lashes so thick they must have been glued on. She looks like a doll, a very, very sexy one. I think I know why she looks so flawless. She's put on pageant makeup, which is something I've never seen her wear. She doesn't need makeup at all, but I like that she's gotten so dolled up for a night out with me. So you're lucky, I say, raking my gaze over her slowly for emphasis. It was worth the wait. She flashes a smile. Her lips a shimmery pink and paler than usual. They're innocent-looking lips, which makes me think about other innocent lips. My cock is rock fucking hard. For the first time in my life, I understand why men buy trophy wives. I want to own Avery. From the roots of her glossy hair to the tips of her polished toes, I want an all-access pass to her body, so every pretty little hole has to surrender to my cock. My muscles clench and my gaze flickers to the couch. I could fuck her on it right now, or bend her over it. In my pocket, my phone buzzes, making me think of vibrators. Teasing her with one could push her over the edge into letting me do really dirty things. That's a temptation I won't resist forever. Another buzz from my phone. I don't have time for sex now, but later. I reach into my pocket to adjust my aching dick before I pull my phone out. Glancing down, I read Sorensen's text. He's walking over and is about 3 minutes out from the frat house. Good. Avery passes me, and I fall in step. When she reaches the front door, I move forward to pull it open for her. Outside, I guide her to the car and put her in the passenger seat. As I walk around the car, I call Sorensen and ask him to do me the favor. He doesn't speak until I'm finished. Then all he says is, "Sure." Often the guy's only slightly more verbal than the monolithic rock he resembles. When we arrive, cars are lined up at the Lambda Delta house. I skip the line with a wave at the valet. "Morin, I'm parking in back." He moves the orange cones so I can drive through to the rear. My hand drops to Avery's thigh and squeezes. "You made us late. How are you going to make up for that?" Avery's head turns, causing the loose strands of her hair to sway. Her eyes search my face. Her expression dubious. After a moment, she says, "What did you have in mind?" My smile's wicked. "I don't think you want my advice on that. You remember last night, right?" The rise in color in her cheeks tells me she remembers plenty about the way I forced her over my lap for spanking. Her fingers laced together, hands clutching each other. "I believe I said no more games like that. If you don't want to be punished, you shouldn't be a bad little girl." Her lips part, and she licks them. Being late to a party is not a big deal. My mouth curves into a smirk as I note she doesn't tell me not to call her a bad little girl. By day, she pretends to be a straight-A, straight-laced co-ed. But with me, she's something else entirely. You'd think being late is no big deal, but sometimes it is. I pull in and spot Sorensen in the doorway. The truck's gone, so the crates are inside. "Stay in the car a minute. I'll take you in the front door so you can make an entrance." Her brows draw together in consternation. I don't want to. I'll just come in with you. I'm surprised. Why wouldn't a girl who looks like she does tonight want the big entrance? Not through the back. But if you want a low-key arrival, that's fine. The tension in her shoulders eases, and she nods. You don't like potties? Her gaze shifts away from me, staring into the middle distance. Depends, she murmurs. I stroke her jaw with my thumb. My girl has secrets. I want in on them. Wait here. I'll be right back.
Avery. Shane leaves the car, but his presence lingers. The faint scent of soap and spicy cologne. The memory of the timbre of his voice when he implied I owe him a sexy payback for taking so long to get ready. It would be easy to get swept up in the moment. But the night is a ticking time bomb that could lead to an explosion of bad memories. I flick a finger against the inside of my wrist. The pain helps distract from anxiety. Let it go, Elsa. Maybe this party is exactly what I need. Immersion therapy of sorts, with Shane's larger-than-life presence creating a different focus. As he emerges from the doorway, I admire the cut of his suit and the way he looks in it. Handsome, powerful, rich. The suit must have cost 10 times what my dress did. Shane seems to have plenty of money, probably from shady deeds done for his grandfather, monster indeed. He opens my door and holds out his hand. I take it and my stomach flutters. Every time he touches me, I feel it to my core. Goose flesh rises as I ease out of the seat and feel the heat of his body as I come into contact with him. The night is pretty but cold. The smell of smoke from a grill and the more subtle scent of fallen leaves being churned into soil waft by. Shane slides an arm around my shoulders and pulls me against his side. The warmth of his body is welcome. The side entrance isn't far. We turn a corner and follow a narrow path. He checks the side door and, finding it unlocked, pushes it open. I step in and onto a dimly lit landing. Behind us, he locks the door.
Finally, a dark corner I can use. I'll take a kiss.
His voice is low and sexy and seems to curl right into my body from my belly down to the V between my legs. I squeeze my thighs together, pressing the spot that hums with anticipation. No kissing. I sound winded. We decided, remember?
No.
Shane's breath smells faintly of liquor, and I realize he must have had a drink when he was in the house. His lips brush against mine, soft and tantalizing.
Live dangerously.
Don't, caution whispers. But I do. When his lips press against mine, my mouth opens for him. The tip of my tongue touches his, and he strokes it slowly, penetrating my mouth and staking his claim. He tastes of whiskey. Sexy and delicious. 3 years of wondering what this would be like finally comes to a close while we're cloaked in formal wear and darkness, standing in secret on a frat house landing. The kiss is dangerously perfect. One of his hands presses against my back, gathering me to him. His body is warm and solid, and mine melts against it. The way we explore each other's mouths is unhurried and laced with lust. My arm snakes around him, too. A hand slips under his suit jacket, so I can feel his back through the soft fabric of his shirt. Several moments pass, everyone warmer than the one before, until I'm flushed and aching for him. His grip on me tightens, anchoring me against his hard body as the kiss turns deeper and more demanding. The noise of heavy footfalls coming downstairs shatters the moment. Shane raises his head with a low growl. Male voices, loud with excitement, are nearby and then recede. Alone again in the darkness, we're hidden from view. He adjusts the front of his trousers, which I'm guessing are barely concealing his erection. A little thrill of power courses through me, and I smile. Was the kiss enough?
It was.
He pauses, tilting his head so his eyes glint in the moonlight streaming through the window.
And it wasn't.
My chuckle is soft, not wanting to give away our position to anyone nearby. I meant, was that enough to make up for keeping you waiting?
Yeah, it'll do.
His casualness dims the joy of a moment ago. I don't know what else I want from him. More charm? More romance? More something. A light flicks on nearby, illuminating our nook. We're still hidden, except from each other's eyes. More footfalls on the stairs.
I see we should do a shot of that Rebel Knock 45 from Morin before we're too drunk to know the difference.
By the sound of the guy's voice, I'd say he's already past the point of too drunk.
No, that's for tomorrow night.
This voice sounds sharper, or at least less inebriated.
We'll fire up some Cubans and each have a glass to celebrate. You locked both bottles in the safe?
Yeah. When they leave the stairs and move away, I raise my brows at Shane. Are you dealing in liquor? You're not even 21.
Must be another Morin, he says casually.
Liar. He takes my hand and starts to thread our fingers together. I draw my arms back, hugging my waist with them. Rebel Knock is whiskey? I ask.
I think what he meant to say was Rebel Unach.
Which is Irish for
rebel.
His smirk is irresistible. I want to know his secrets. I wish I didn't. He leads me into a small room with an archway entry into the main one. In the brightly lit space, there are lots of women in platinum-colored dresses and men in suits. None of the dresses are as formal as mine. My mom would say it's better to be overdressed than under.
Wait in the shadows until I signal, Shane says.
What? My heartbeat kicks into a gallop. He promised no grand entrance. Before I can ask what he intends to do, Shane steps out into the main room, blending in immediately and disappearing from view. As moments pass, anxiety ticks up within me. This feels very much like waiting in the wings to take the stage during the pageants of my childhood. Lots of effort spent, so I'll look a certain way, and now every inch of me is about to be judged. My fingers come up to make sure my lipstick isn't smeared around my mouth. Mom's features always grew so pinched over makeup smudges. Her voice echoes in my memory, "Don't lick your lips. Don't touch your face." On the most terrible of nights, 6-year-old me looked flawless. At first. My dad finally came to a pageant, took one look at me, and started raging. He used words I'd never heard. Pimping, whore, pedophile bait. Everyone began whispering and staring. It was my turn to take the stage for talent, and I did, only to freeze up as I watched him storm out in disgust. Red blotches of angry, embarrassed color stained Mom's cheeks. She nodded sharply for me to continue. The opening bars of Defying Gravity started 3 times before I fled the stage. That was my last pageant. And the last time I saw my dad in person. As the memories consume me, my heart thumps uncomfortably, and my hands grow shaky. Mom claimed by not competing again, I was letting him win. But for me, being dressed and made up for another pageant wouldn't have felt like a triumph. I'd never loved it, and now, under my dad's ferocious criticism, it was tainted with shame. Mom relented and let me quit. But we would never spend as much time together again. I went to science camp, and she went on to create lots of other little beauty queens as a consultant.
That was better for both of us, mostly. A fleeting thought of taking a picture of myself to send to Mom and Ethan passes through my mind. My mom still loves to see me dressed up, and he'd enjoy it too. Senior year of high school, they were disappointed I didn't go to prom. The lingering effects of being frozen out socially. Boys were wary of me, and girls were icy, lest the boys think they were sympathetic. I reacted to their scorn with some of my own, shearing off my hair and dressing as an outcast. Shane asked why I'm still a virgin. How could I be anything else? My tongue traces my lips and recalls our kiss. I dressed for him tonight. I kissed him because it's what he wanted. In high school, I'd have given anything for a kiss like that with him. His senior year, he wouldn't give me as much as a hello. Things between us are moving fast now. A part of me loves feeling irresistible and can't get enough of it. Another part knows this could end badly, and that he shouldn't get every piece of me now just because he wants it. Shane appears in the archway, a couple of drinks in his hands. He nods for me to join him.
Come on, baby doll. Let me show you off.
Baby doll. Let me show you off. More shades of my pageant days, and of Shane's sudden tendency to treat me like he owns me. The straps of my shoes cut into my feet, which remain frozen to the floor.
You'll come to dinner in Back Bay. You'll come to the platinum party with me. Obey, or I'll spank you. Your virginity's mine to take. Dressed, waxed, kissed.
I'm like a pretty little puppet he controls with the pluck of a string. And his magnetism is so potent, it's often irresistible. Apparently noting my frown, his expression changes, shuddering away the warmth as his eyes narrow. He strides closer, watching my face the entire time.
What's going on?
A doll's life. Doesn't suit me. I shouldn't have come. I try to make my voice light, but I can't. The undercurrent is angry because I'm frustrated. His brow arches.
Again, I say, what's going on, Avery?
Things you don't need to know. I can have a locked room too, right? Moss green eyes narrow farther, and his jaw ticks dangerously. Leaning down, he whispers in my ear.
Tell me.
My skin prickles, a wave of unease coursing through me. Shane's not just tough on the outside. Emotionally, he's brutally tough too. Am I prepared to fight this fight? We've hurt each other a lot in the past. I blow out a slow breath, steeling myself. Let's not risk doing it again.
You think kissing me is risky?
Yes.
Because it is.
His lips brush the angle of my jaw.
You could be right. But it's too late to turn back now.
I shudder as the sensation of his lips on my skin spirals through me. Sucking in a breath, I step back. Shane raises a glass.
Yes, cherry coke.
No alcohol. A lime wedge bobs atop the fizzing liquid. As I sip, I watch him warily over the rim of the frosty glass.
Seems like there's more we need to settle. All right. We'll talk when we get home.
He tilts his head, looking down the front of my dress. Again, it feels like he's taking inventory, admiring the way my breasts look in the ultra-sexy bodice.
We won't stay much longer, but you promised to wear your game face tonight, Avery. So put it on.
He sets my empty glass on a ledge and takes my arm, pulling me into the light. I'm startled by the suddenness of being in the more public space. I try to retreat, but in an instant, his left arm slides around my waist, encircling it. He maneuvers my body, so my back presses against his torso. The way he's holding me is overtly possessive and covertly oppositional. Shane raises his glass and then his voice.
Here's to Lambda Delta Kappa being nothing but platinum.
The room erupts with cheers, and suddenly hundreds of eyes are upon us. I try to move forward so we're not touching, but his grip is firm. I'm anchored to him. I reach down instinctively, my nails digging into his forearm. Turning my head, I study his profile. Shane, I whisper. The one word, a warning. Stay still. I'm doing something. I'll explain later.
Then he smiles, but not at me.
He's watching the room.
Hey, send me that.
My head jerks forward, and I realize people are snapping pics. I stiffen, forcing myself not to scowl because our personal war should not be for public consumption. As I smile, my nails dig deeper. I know I must be hurting him. Under all his hard muscles, he's still flesh and blood. His mouth moves to my ear, the whisper excruciatingly intimate. Are you a kitten? Because only kittens get to dig their claws into me. That's a strange thing to say since he doesn't have a cat. His cock presses against my ass, the thin, billowy chiffon not able to protect me from the feel of it. Something in my core clenches and throbs in a traitorous primal response. My body wants his. Full stop. My mind, on the other hand, rebels, horrified that my nipples have puckered, and my hips want to press backward against him. My face heats until I feel like I'm about to burst into flames. I tell my fingers to let go of him, but they won't. I'm holding on for dear life.
You have 3 seconds to stop, Avery.
His soft breath caresses my ear. And I can't think. Can't move. My mind is trying to convince my body to listen to me.
3, 2, 1. You're in so much trouble, kitten.
He pulls me a few feet to a table and sets his glass down. Then his right hand grabs my wrist and yanks my hand away from him. When he turns me to face him, I avert my eyes. Too many emotions churn inside me. His left hand slides down to my ass. My eyes widen and I start to reach back.
I wouldn't, he warns. It won't move until I decide to move it. All you'll do is draw attention to us.
My arm's motion stutters midair, and I let it drop to my side. Move your hand.
I will in a second. But my hand's not what you need to worry about.
It's hard to contain everything I feel. A part of me wants to fight with him until he either lets me go or wins so unquestionably that the war waging inside me ends. My whisper is agitated. What do I need to worry about?
The things I'm going to do to you when we're alone tonight.
My breath catches in my throat. I can't move or even breathe.
Damn, a familiar voice says. That's some brutal shit.
Shane's green eyes hold mine for a beat. Then he directs his attention to the voice's owner. As I start to turn, my gaze lands on Daniel's face. It was his voice, but he's not looking at us. He's looking up. I follow the direction of his stare. On the second floor, a row of men stand at a half wall. Todd Bartarach is among them. They're facing forward, studying the room below them like kings at a banquet. Each has a lavender rose in his buttonhole. What? I murmur, confused.
It's a salute?
Daniel sounds bemused.
Yeah, seems like it is, Shane says grimly.
My head swims, realization dawning. A salute to Casanova.
Chapter 15. Shane. As soon as Declan approaches, I let Avery slip from my grasp. My eyes track her as she joins a line for the bathroom. But then Deck's deep frown demands attention. What the hell is going on? His disapproving tone is no surprise. For 2 years, my stance on the home front was unchanged, and he backed my play every single day, which at the beginning, when I moved in with him, was the only thing that kept me from feeling completely isolated. Pretty much what it looks like, I say. My tone is mild, almost joking, though if anyone deserves a serious explanation, it's Declan. Movement upstairs causes my eyes to shift. To his left, Todd Borderach has a pit fighter who goes by the nickname Cyborg. Is the guy here on bodyguard duty, watching Borderach's back? If so, I have to give Borderach credit for his counter move. Deck leans closer, and light glints off his white gold designer tie bar. It retails for $5,000, which I know because it was the gift I included when I paid him back the seed money he gave me to start our joint venture. The white gold complements the black and platinum silk tie he's wearing to conform with the night's theme. Declan lowers his voice so he can speak without others overhearing. I meant, what's the deal with Avery Kershaw? Yeah, so did I. She's with me tonight. And for the foreseeable future, I add in my own head. His brows rise. When did the goal of staying away from her change? Yesterday. Because? He's using his chairman of the board voice, which demands answers. If anyone else took that tone with me, I'd shut the conversation down in a heartbeat, by force, if necessary. But Deck gets a pass. My gaze flickers up to the purple rose guys for a second and then back to Declan. Is your stepmother trying to set you up with Avery? It's my voice's turn to use a Hayworth chairman of the board tone. A groove appears between his dark brows as they draw together in confusion. Not that I know of. Why do you ask? You don't know a thing about it? What's the word on the home front? Is your stepmother in touch with mine? My stepmom and yours are BFFs, which I saw coming from the first time they met. He rolls his eyes and shifts his weight. But I've made it clear that Avery Kershaw is not welcome company. My dad and his wife know I don't want her around. So why would the stepmothers think matchmaking you guys would work? Declan frowns, leaning back defensively. Who says they do? You haven't heard about a Morin Hayworth ski trip? He looks genuinely confused. A Hayworth Morin ski trip? No. My family is going to the house in Aspen for Christmas. He nudges me with a fist. You're welcome to come, of course. I'd be glad if you did. Since it's before the championship game, I won't be skiing. I smile at Declan's, giving the Hayworth name top billing when he answers. His family always thinks about whose name is highest on the door. Your dad uses the Aspen house more than you do these days. Probably doesn't always give you a heads up on who he's invited. He shrugs. I'll check. Nah, it's all right, I say, waving that off. You'd never try to hook up with Avery? I watch him closely for any flicker of doubt on that score. None comes. His hand smooths his suit lapel. Last I checked, neither of us would. I shrug. What are you doing, brother? His tone is concerned now and trying to make me see sense. You know you can't trust her. After a beat, I nod. I've taken some precautions. I have an insurance policy. But why waste your time with someone you know you need one with? I'm not sure I know that about her. What? He leans forward. I mean, what? What happened back then? I don't think it was ever malicious. She woke up from being blackout drunk. You know how that is. So do I. You can't even be sure what you've done. How are you going to be sure of what other people did? She wasn't thinking straight. Declan's brows shoot up to his hairline at my defense of her. I'm not bothered. It'll take Deck a while to stop thinking the worst of Avery, if he ever does. First, because his family's got the kind of money that leads to contested wills, messy divorces, and vicious custody battles. There have even been some mysterious deaths. The Hayworth family is like a Game of Thrones reality show where blackmail and backstabbing are competitive sports. The unspoken family motto is trust no one. And then there's the second reason he'll be skeptical much longer than me. He hasn't kissed her at a moment when she's trying like hell to keep her distance. If she was just out for what she could get from me, she would not play hard to get the way she is, and her mouth wouldn't taste the way it does under mine. So fucking sweet that I could make a meal of kissing her and nothing else. There is something to us, the way there always has been, and now, after being dormant for 2 years, it's come back stronger than ever. Avery is meant to be mine. I don't know how long she'll belong to me, or if things will end worse than they did 2 years ago, but I know that right here, right now, she's mine, and I cannot let her go. I lean in, making sure I infuse some due respect into my tone because I'm about to disagree with Declan, which he doesn't get often from anyone. I know you thought Avery let me twist because she was trying to keep attention off her own wrongdoing and because she couldn't resist feeding the drama, but that's not the way it was. It's not how she operates.
Right.
His skepticism carries some of the Hayworth arrogance, but not the full force of it because we're friends. What do you know about how she operates? Not as much as I'd like to, I quip. His expression shifts to one of surprise. What did she do for you yesterday? I smile. Exactly. Movement above us draws my eyes up, and time slows down because Avery is toe-to-toe with Borderatch. From their expressions, I can tell neither wants to be friends. Then she reaches out and grabs his rose, jerking it and tearing his suit. Oh, shit. I break for the stairs and fly up them. By the time I reach the top, three rose guys surround her. Two of them are Lambda Deltas, which, since we're in their house, doesn't bode well for picking a fight with them. Avery's way past the point of no return. She jerks another guy's flower from his lapel, throws it to the ground, and stomps it to paste. How dare you, she says, eyes blazing. On Borderatch's command, Cyborg reaches out to grab Avery. I whistle, which causes Cyborg's attention to shift to me. I point at Avery and shake my head. The guy steps back. Todd swivels angrily toward his muscle.
I said to toss her out.
I shoulder my way into the fray and shove Avery behind me.
You didn't say your problem was with Morin, Cyborg says.
What difference does that make? Borderatch snaps. Whatever he's paying you, I'll double it if you take a walk, I tell Cyborg, knowing my leverage isn't really about money. It's in the fact that he knows who I really am. Not only do I control the underground fight club where he makes serious bank, but I'm also Joe Sullivan's grandson. No amount of money from a limp dick college guy is worth taking on Boston's Irish Mafia. Cyborg nods at me and lopes off toward the stairs. Borderatch looks like his head might explode. Wilson, the Lambda VP, steps forward, puffing out his chest.
Does this little bitch belong to you, Morin?
He leans close enough for Avery's hand to snake out and get his rose. She yanks it from his chest and throws it down, emerging from behind me to smash it in front of him. She's out of fucking control. But Wild does look good on her. Wilson's hand shoots out, like he thinks he's fast enough to put a hand on her while I'm standing right there. I sweep her back behind me so his hand gets air. Frustrated, he keeps coming. I let my fist have his nose. His head jerks back with a pop and a spray of blood. He goes down hard, landing on his ass with a thud that shakes the floor. Borderatch erupts with an angry challenge.
If you're not strong enough to get that little bitch under control, then get out of the way.
If I'm not strong enough, I'm not the one whose suit she ripped. His taunt is fucking laughable. At the moment, though, I'm not in the mood to laugh. Fuck off, I growl. She's 110 pounds and wearing high heels. Who are you gonna brawl next? Some toddlers? Borderatch is apoplectic with rage.
You fucking lowlife.
You don't belong at GU, and neither does your white trash whore from the projects. I answer that with my fist, and he takes it on the jaw and goes down flailing, knocking over a plant stand as he falls. The crash echoes throughout the upper floor. Wilson regains his feet.
And it's on. They rush me, and it's all fists flying. Declan swoops in from my blind spot and knocks a Lambda Delta flat. These guys know fuck all about fighting, but they've got numbers on their side, so Deck and I have to dig in and let loose on them. Then Sorensen's there, and it's over. He drives forward using his massive bulk, and the whole row falls like bowling pins. A ton more guys come pounding up the stairs, including the LD president, who barks for everyone to stand down.
What's going on, Morin?
I'm breathing hard as I rub blood from my knuckles, but gangster rule number one is that violence is routine. When I speak, it's with the casual ease of someone who doesn't worry about bloodstains that aren't his own. These guys try to start a Casanova fan club. My girl, not a fan.
A Casanova fan club?
The president's eyes narrow in confusion and dart to the pummeled frat boys who are trying to regain their feet and their pride. Lavender roses. Casanova's signature. I nod at a rose Avery's shoe hasn't met yet. Barterach wipes blood from his mouth.
It was just a joke.
Sure. Missing girls. The perfect punchline, Avery says. I don't know why there are true crime sections in bookstores. Those stories should definitely be shelved in comedy.
Shut the hell up, Kershaw!
Todd snaps, causing specks of his blood to tattoo the banister. And just so you know, when Morin drops you, I'll be waiting. Naturally. Avery snaps back, taking a step toward him. I'd expect nothing less from someone who'd wear a flower to gloat and glorify a sociopath. Todd glares at her.
You have a problem, he hisses. You'd better not go out alone.
If he knew me, my dead stare would shut him up. When I don't punch someone who needs punching, it's because I plan to catch up to him later when there are no witnesses. Sorensen stretches out a hand and crushes first one, and then the last of the two roses that were left standing.
There, Casanova Club, he says,
his tone pavement flat.
Come for me, too.
Avery's eyes go from narrowed slits to saucers at Sorensen's unexpected defense. Declan just chuckles. Grace under pressure, as always.
As much fun as this has been, I think it's time to go.
Declan claps me on the shoulder.
Shane?
Yeah.
I catch Avery's arm in my hand and guide her toward the stairs. After a moment, she resists. Stopping to look at her, I quirk a brow.
You made your point.
And Sorensen put an exclamation point after it.
What more do you need?
Nothing, she whispers. Her expression fierce. I just don't want it to look like a man's dragging me off for misbehaving.
Ah.
I release her arm. Want to pump your fist in the air while you jog down the steps in triumph?
Go ahead.
I smirk, though I know it'll go unappreciated. An eye roll is the lightest response she can manage. No victory lap. That wasn't a victory. Avery clutches her skirt and lifts it a couple inches, so she can hurry down the stairs. I keep pace, watching her in my peripheral vision. Declan and Sorensen follow us down. When Avery reaches the ground floor, there are several women standing in a row. As she passes, they fall in step behind her. The women are led by Eden Buchanan, the captain of the dance team. A guy darts forward to try to stop the blonde dance queen.
Eden, where are you going?
For a petite girl, Eden has a knack for looking down her nose at others when the situation calls for it. I'm going to the same place every girl in this place should. Away from here. Her set down is met with female applause. I doubt any of the Lamb Deltas are getting laid tonight. When we get outside, the dance team splinters off from us, heading toward the front of the house. Eden turns and calls out,
Eric Sorensen, anytime you need a date for anything, call me.
Or me, says another.
Me,
a third chimes in. There's nothing flirtatious or cheerful in their tones. They're not talking to Sorensen, the football superstar. They're speaking to Sorensen, the flower crusher. And doesn't that just make it sweeter? Sorensen stares after them as their long hair and long skirts stream behind them. They stalk away like fucking Valkyries. Once we're at my car, I open the passenger door of the Porsche.
Avery hesitates, glancing at me as though she's not sure whether to make another stand, this time against the patriarchy that deems it chivalrous for a guy to open a car door for a woman. After a halting breath, she climbs in. When I'm inside and pulling the car out onto the street, she finally speaks. I want a gun and shooting lessons. No. Avery's the last person I'd hand a gun to right now. She had no control over her emotions tonight. Besides, guns do not belong in untrained hands, and having one might make her overconfident. Casanova undoubtedly has a way of getting in close before a woman knows to be afraid. Otherwise, someone would have heard a scream. Yes, Avery's voice is as firm as mine. A gun and lessons. Then she makes me the offer she thinks I won't be able to resist. You can name your price.
Chapter 16. Avery. Rather than getting on the highway, Shane turns into a residential neighborhood a few blocks from the Lambda Delta house. Where are we going? I demand.
I need to make a stop on the way home. It'll only take a few minutes.
His fingers drum on the head of the gear shift. My gaze fixes on his knuckles, which are covered in dried blood that's as brown as steak sauce. I hope all of it is Todd's. Digging through the small clutch I left tucked in Shane's car, I pull out the plastic sheaf of makeup removal wipes. I can't believe they were Casanova roses. I jerk a cleansing wipe from the container and grab Shane's right hand. They're such assholes. His fingers close into a tight fist as soon as I start cleaning his scraped knuckles. Todd didn't even recognize their names. They mean nothing to him. Because Shane's silent, my gaze flicks up to his face. His jaw is set and he stares straight ahead at the road. Am I hurting him? The cleanser is gentle, but at the moment, I'm not. I finish quickly and release his hand. Well? My fury continues to burst out in waves. Whose names? The missing girls? Shane's tone is merely curious, which is much too calm to suit me. Yes, I know their names, where they're from, what they plan to major in. They're as important as Casanova, more so, in fact. There should be as much coverage of the missing women as there is of him. The focus is on Casanova because he still needs to be caught. No, when he's caught, which he'd better be soon, there will be endless hours spent dissecting his useless life and sharing every detail. To the media, only the man matters. Shane grimaces, leaning his head away from me.
Lower your voice. I'm sitting right next to you.
My hand slaps the car door in frustration, and I turn my head away. You don't get it. My voice is lower, but still full of vitriol. Of course you don't. Shane pulls into a driveway, and for a second, I think it's so he can fight with me. My body goes rigid from shock and the anticipation of yet another confrontation. When he speaks, though, his voice is firm, but not angry.
I do get it, Avery. I do.
He turns off the engine.
I'll be right back.
He exits the car and goes to the door of a red brick house. After he knocks, the door opens, revealing the silhouette of a woman. She disappears from view and then returns, handing him a small gold gift bag. After he puts it in the trunk, we finish the 10-minute drive home. I stay stonily silent, still stewing in my rage. Shane's countenance continues to be languid. Instead of calming me, that feeds my discontent. Once inside the house, he sets the mysterious gift bag on the couch. Is it a gun? I ask hopefully, standing a few feet away.
No. You don't need a gun.
His arms fold across his broad chest, and his gaze captures mine.
As the world saw tonight, you've already got a weapon.
Me.
That's not good enough, I think defiantly.
Does Shane want me to stay powerless?
A part of me wonders whether he wants to keep me feeling vulnerable so I'll need to stay with him and continue to be a sex toy. A little current of electricity runs through me at the thought. But imagining Todd's smug face also makes me want to blow holes in the wall right now. Breathing through my nose, I try not to clench my teeth. I've said I'll barter for a gun and lessons. Isn't there anything you want from me? His gaze rakes over me slowly. You know there is. My teeth grind at the thought of trading my virginity for a gun. But maybe that is what's meant to happen. All my innocence gone in one quick exchange, and good riddance to it. The world is not a place that rewards naivete. The next words catch in my throat, but I force them out. So help me get a gun and you can have it. I don't want to be reliant on anyone else's protection. Arms folded across his chest, Shane looks impatient. No. Guns are dangerous to their owners. Plenty of people have their own guns used against them. Is that the only reason you don't want me to have one? Why else? He counters, motioning with a head tilt for me to sit. I walk over and lower myself onto the dreaded couch. Not because Shane indicated I should, but because my feet hurt from wearing heels all night. I circle my feet with a slow grimace. Shane sits on the coffee table and rests my legs on his knees so he can unbuckle the straps of my shoes. With the straps slack, I'm free to kick them off, which I do with considerable force. Fuck Todd Borderatch. A shoe bangs against the wall, leaving a mark as it drops to the floor. Easy. Let's not spend the night patching drywall. Why was Todd's giant afraid of you? Because you carry a gun, right? Avery, Shane says slowly, shaking his head. The rage inside me makes my entire body vibrate. Don't tell me it's all right for you to have a gun and not me. Listen to me. No! I shoot up and move around the couch toward the stairs. If you won't help me, fine. I'll find someone who will. Wait, he commands. I ignore him and hustle up the steps. Behind me, I hear his pursuit. I don't make it to the guest room before he grabs me. Do not manhandle me. My voice cracks from the strain of trying not to yell. Then control your temper. The struggle I wage gets me nowhere, except deeper into my own frustration. Furious tears sting my eyes, and I have to blink them away. Enough now. His voice is louder than it's been as he lifts me from the floor and carries me into his room. When he tosses me on the bed, I roll to the other side. I wish there was a way to knock him off balance. Tonight, I really want my own strength to mean something. I must look ready for more mayhem because Shane says, if I were you, I wouldn't. His warning tone sends a shudder through me. At the edge of the bed, I stop, looking back at him. I don't understand how he's not even breathing hard. His control pisses me off, even though I admire it. Pushing wisps of hair behind my ears, I force myself to calm down. Shane's right. Enough is enough. He drops the gold gift bag on the mattress. I can't believe he thought to grab it as he came after me. His fingers pulled the knob of the nightstand's top drawer, opening it. Retrieving a plastic bottle from inside, Shane tosses it on the bed next to the gold bag. As he looks at me, his expression is full of challenge. What's this? Leaning forward, I read the bottle's label, which reveals that it contains lubricant. It takes a moment for it to register that it's for sex. My gaze jerks up to his face. He can't really be expecting to take my virginity right now. What the hell? I push back until I'm on the opposite side of the mattress again. The skirt's billowing fabric tangles around my legs. I jerk it free, preparing for flight. My fingers crumple the fabric as I hold the panels together to keep from flashing my bare thighs. Shane's pursed lips part,
and he licks them, watching me the way a lion watches a gazelle. His expression seems to say, "Try to run. You're fast, but I'm faster." What he actually says is, "Open the box." Glancing at the white box that's peeking out of the gift bag, I'm still for a moment. Then curiosity gets the best of me. I slide the box out and remove its lid. At first, I think the length of fur is a skinny stole. But when I lift it, I realize it's a faux fur tail with a teardrop-shaped stainless steel knob on the end. My confusion must show because he looks slightly amused as he speaks. "You wear it. The metal piece goes inside." "Inside what?" "It's a tail." He gives me a meaningful look. "For a kitten." Oh my God. My brows rise incredulously. "You're kidding." He slides his suit jacket off and sets it over the chair. "You can go in the bathroom and put it in yourself. Or I can do that for you. Guess which I hope you choose." "Shane." "Yes?" He rolls up his sleeves. "I'm not in the mood for games." "You don't need to be in the mood. It's your punishment. You're going to crawl around my bed, naked, except for your tail. If you're good, I'll pet you. If you're not, you can get spanked with the plug in your ass." My heart thumps wildly. Are you doing this just because I scratched you? Or is this because I made a scene and destroyed those purple roses? It's 90% because you dug your nails into me and 10% because your ass felt so good pressed against my groin while you were digging your nails into me. It's 0% about anything else. The last thing I'd punish you for is crushing those roses underfoot like they were Bardarach's balls. I wish it had been his balls. I wanted to hit him. Aren't you glad you did? He nods. Why didn't you keep going? A breath escapes as a small laugh. It's not a movie, baby. I don't know what that means. You punched several of them. Yeah, I did. His left thumb strokes the knuckles of his right hand to keep them from getting their hands on you. My head tilts, watching him closely. What do you think they would have done to me? It's only now that I'm even considering that. It depends. His expression tells me he can see in his mind's eye the exact possibilities. I also realize I don't want to think about it. The situation began and escalated because I could not stop confronting them. I just couldn't. What difference does it make how they planned to hurt me? Even if I'd known, it wouldn't have mattered. My rage was out of control. And Shane defended me, even knowing he was outnumbered. He could have left me to confront them alone, but he didn't. I sit back on my heels, blowing out a slow breath. A lot of the anger I've been projecting onto him drains away. I have a couple things to say. His palm turns up in a keep going gesture. I didn't want you to pull me into the main room the way you did. I know, but I had good reasons for doing it. Like, I want people to think you're my girlfriend. That alone could make Casanova decide not to take you. And it will definitely prevent a lot of assholes from causing trouble for you. His green gaze burrows into me. Unless you humiliate them. The way you did with the Casanova Club. Then all bets are off. Because when men feel humiliated, they don't behave rationally. I stroke the fur. And then put the lid back on the box. All right, I murmur. I will pretend to be a sex kitten for you, but not as a punishment, and not right now. I'll do it because you stood between me and 5 angry men, and because you didn't tell me to shut up or to stop grabbing roses, even though I was making a volatile situation worse. Why didn't you tell me to stop? The corners of his mouth lift. Because. I smile as well, realizing he understands exactly why it would have been wrong to stop me. I took a stand, and Shane made sure no one forced me to back down.
It's why I fell for him at 15. And why I'm falling all over again tonight. You should wear the tail now. It'll take your mind off how pissed you are. No, it won't. You sure you don't want to try? Anything else I do to you as punishment will make you sore. My stomach does a little flip.